Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders. I am your host, Kyle, and joining me today is Niels Kops. Did I say that right? I messed
That's
it up.
That's all right.
You just told me to. Coops. I knew that. Niels Kops. Niels is a 14-year market veteran and the founder of Trader.com, and that's TRADRR.com. No E's allowed here. Before we kick off today's conversation with Niels, let's get the promotional stuff out of the way. So, Niels, where can people find more about you and learn more about the platform you developed?
Yeah, so it's trader.com without the E. So it's TRADRR.com. And yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Do you have any socials or anything that you guys post on?
Yeah, it's also at trader. Also at trader. Yeah. So my Instagram, TRADRR.
Instagram, huh?
Instagram. Yeah, it's also actually on YouTube. It's also with the same username. So you can also do that.
Oh, good. You have a YouTube too. Oh, nice.
But I'm not super active yet. So we're going to do that soon. Like I tried it because I just like recently looked at my YouTube and I saw like a video from the ES showing footprint charts from 11 years ago or something. I'm like, wow, I uploaded that. I'm like, okay, that's been a while. I forgot about that. So that was kind of funny. But like, yeah, I'm going to try to do that again, you know, because like, you know, it works really well. So
it's just so much time, isn't it? Especially the video side of it.
Yeah, and so you said like 14 years, right? But it's almost in May. It's 15 years already now.
Wow.
So yeah, time flies. Time really flies.
Let me get my stuff out of the way here first, and then let's start milking that. Yeah. If anybody has any suggestions or questions or corrections that they want to send in, please do that via email at bandoftraderspodcast@gmail.com, or you can join our free Discord server, or just DM us on Twitter at financialinept1. We'll have all those links in the episode description so you can peruse them at your own convenience. Now I think it's time we get to know Niels. So you said 15 years, huh? So like take me back to the beginning there. Like how'd you get started in the markets? What stoked your interest?
So mathematics always interest me and things with numbers and you know, and I used to work in IT where I just ended up like I had a side job when I was studying. So I was quit my study of mathematics because I was like, yeah, it's going to take too long. I just want to do something, you know, I was like, no. And so the side job that I had, which was like just in a warehouse, right? It was like a super simple student job. But for some reason, they asked me to come work at the office there in automation and like to work with computers there. I'm like, okay, cool. Sounds good. So I did that for a while. And I was like, yeah, this is also not really what I'm looking for. So
What kind of automation were you doing? So I used to do some of that for industrial.
Yeah, doing like automations with like I call it like stock control, like
PLCs, like Allen Bradley and
I don't know where it is. Sorry,
Siemens, that kind of stuff.
No, but I think they were trying to work with like handhelds and doing like order pickings with that, things like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, things like that. And gotcha. And yeah, like well, at the time it was nice, and you know, it was in Amsterdam, and you know, it's a nice location, and. So at the time I was like, sure, let's do that. But yeah, so I did that for a while and then I got like,
I'm going to make a note. I want to go back to Amsterdam at one point here.
Oh yeah. So I lived almost half my life in Amsterdam. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No worries. And, so I did that. And I was like, yeah, this is not going to be my career the rest of my life. So I was like, I'll just quit and I'll start trading. So, okay. Let's figure it is. I knew pretty much nothing from trading. I had a friend in university, and I told him like, hey, I wanna trade, like just like you, you know, he did pretty well. So I paid him some money and I sat next to him side by side, and he kind of he showed me around, all the things like that, and I was like, okay, cool, I'll go do this. So so I was like, sure. So I opened up my account and stuff like that. I think at the time, like, what was that? I think it was Interactive Brokers. Yeah, Interactive Brokers.
That was pretty close to like the 08 crash then, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Like, yeah, it was after, yeah. Yeah, it's because it was May 09, if I remember correctly. So that's, May 09. Yeah, so that's almost 15 years. Yeah, so I just started doing that, you know, and I was like, cool. But so the friend that I was training with, he had more friends that were trading. So we were kind of like a group that traded every day and, you know, chatting away and, you know, trying to help each other. Mm-hmm. But they were mainly like stock traders, right? So they were trading stocks and like penny stocks and like the very high volatile stocks.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was very interesting. and at the time, we were mainly trading stocks in France, because in France, there were some stocks that that moved a lot, and also with some volumes, you know, you could really trade it, not just see the pump, and then, you know.
Right.
So that worked pretty well, but it was very interesting, and yeah, so that was their thing, right? It was not yet my thing. I was just like, you know, joining your group and just like.
Yeah, you're in the information gathering stage at that point. You're just trying to learn, soak up.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, you know, so we did that. But pretty soon after that, I don't remember how that happened, but I got some interest in the ES and I was like, okay, this is cool. Like, it's more technical, you know, mm-hmm. in futures instead of stocks. And yeah, I want to tell you a nice story of how I found it, but to be honest, I don't remember. It's like almost 50 years ago. I just don't know. I really don't know.
It seems like everybody kind of starts with like the penny stocks or something similar with that. Now it's crypto. A lot of people start out in crypto, it seems like.
Yeah, no, yeah, no, I guess crypto. Yeah, yeah.
Is it just the allure of the volatility? Like, as the beginner trader, like you.
I mean, I guess so. Yes. I mean, the thing is, like, you don't have $1 million, right? When you just start out, so you need to make some money with like a relatively small amount. So you need to have stocks and or things that move quite a lot. Otherwise, you cannot make enough money. And you need to, like, you know, let's say, well, for example, like if you have, well, I don't plan to name numbers, but let's say you have like
say like $500 or something.
Okay, let's do that.
Some people start with like 500, yeah.
Yeah, okay, let's do it like $1,000, like for example, like that.
Yeah.
If you want to make $1,000, you need to make 100%, right? So
right.
That's interesting, like, because no one will, well, you can, but like usually it's like involves some high risk things that you have to do. So not really like sustainable, probably. So no. Yeah, good luck doing that with like a relatively small amount and then trying to make a living from it. Like it's pretty much impossible if you just like trade like Apple or I don't know, Microsoft or any other like the most common stocks. You just can't, you know, like unless you like super over leveraged, but then like yeah, one little swing and you probably hit your margin call, right? So yeah, so you just you just need some stocks that move a lot. In order to make a living off it. So that's kind of, I guess, what interests most people. Yeah.
Kind of curious, because you said you lived in Amsterdam, you were trading on like the French exchanges.
Yeah.
Where are you based out of now?
I'm based in Portugal, yeah, at the beach.
And where?
Portugal? Yeah, Portugal.
Oh, okay, Portugal. Yes. Sorry, we pronounce it a little differently over here.
Oh, sorry, yeah. I mean, yeah.
I was like, is that a city or is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, English is not my first language as well, so sorry about that.
That's all right. No, I've heard Portugal's really, really nice. It's actually, I've heard they've got a really big expat, like US citizen community out there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's true. It's pretty big. It's, yeah, a very open community, I'd say. I really enjoy it. And yeah, so it's been 2 years right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and I like surfing, you know, surfing and kite surfing, and I live like at the beach here. So it's yeah, not too bad.
Oh God. Yeah.
It's terrible, right?
Yeah. I bet they got some real nice beaches there.
Yeah, they do. They do. Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Well, so tell me about some of the, tell me about some of the big lessons that you learned in the beginning there that like still stick with you today. Like what's something that maybe painful or maybe like just a really good experience? It doesn't have to necessarily be bad.
Well, I think most of them are bad. yeah, right. So I started with like way too much money at once in the beginning. And yeah, so my first year, I pretty much lost everything. Yeah, that was kind of like a rough patch. you know, I was like, yeah, let's do this. We can do this. but then the market shows you some reality. And yeah, that didn't go so well at all. So for sure.
What was your takeaways then? Sounds like risk controls or?
Yeah. And I think the main point was also like not being so emotional, because I think I was in the beginning. And sometimes still am, but I know when I'm doing that and know how to like control it better. But I think mainly it was like me acting like emotional to things that the market was doing. Like I felt like it was doing it to me, right? Which is ridiculous. Right. I don't know, but in the beginning,
like
I
come like, take my stop.
Yeah. Because of course, like everyone had it sometimes, right? Like they just tick your stop, like at the tick, and it moves back in your way. I'm like how can you do that?
Right.
Like how is possible? Right? Like it's like unreal. But the reality is sometimes it just happens, you know, like, it's just life. Like you move on. There's always another trade.
I try to write down when it happens against me, but also when it happens in my favor, like when they stop a penny from my, you know, from my stop, or when they hit my take profit, like to the tick and reverse. I write those down too, because you need the balance. You remember the bad things so much more. Like what's the study?
Yeah, it's true. You need like one good thing against five good things against one bad thing or something. Yeah.
Yeah, something crazy.
It's very interesting. It's very interesting. But
and then if you think about it from like the trading psychology aspect of it, like that adds up, right? Because like a good trader's win rate's probably going to be somewhere between like, you know, 40-50%. So that means you're building up a lot.
It depends on your strategy, but yeah, could be. Yeah.
If that's the case though, you're building up a lot of negative mental equity almost.
Yeah, for sure. Especially if your strategy is like to make a profit with a 40-50% win rate. Yeah, then you need to work on that. Yeah, for sure.
What are some of the things that you did to get your emotions in check then?
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good question. I in the beginning I did nothing. I just you know I got pissed at myself, and I'm sure at some point I threw like a plate on the ground. So that was not. I mean, yeah. It was not a good moment, but yeah. So after I kind of realized that was not really sustainable, and I started to dive more into like meditation stuff like that. And I got some coaching. I went to like some seminars. I had coaching through Anthony Robbins, and I went to like some seminars from that. And yeah, that to be honest, that really helped me to get my emotions more in check and like you know get my goals more clear. And also my trades more clear because I went there to get my trading in check. So for me, that really helped, to be honest. And Anthony Robbins, you probably know him.
I know the name.
Yeah. So he also makes people like walk on fire. And I also did that. I was like, what? This is amazing.
Oh, that's right. That guy. Okay. Yeah.
So I did that.
Did you did the fire walk?
I did that. Yeah, I did that. Yeah, I really did that. And it felt so unreal, right? It's like if you think about it, like it's like okay, whatever, like sure, you did that, sure, but I did that, and but the thing is, I was so like hyped up that I forget to wipe my feet in the end, you know, like so you walk over the hot coals, and in the end, like you have to wipe it because there could be like a coal left in your toe or something, but I forgot doing that, and I had the coal left in my toe, and it burnt like hell. I made it all the way, and that little piece of coal like burnt my whole toe. I'm like, Jesus.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah. But I did it.
I burned myself recently. It wasn't firewalking, it was taking a pizza out of the
oh,
oven.
Oh, really?
I had the oven mitt in one hand, and I had the pan in that hand, and I was trying to transfer the pizza from the rack to the pan. Yeah. But the pan had been sitting in there and it was hot.
Right.
And like I had the oven mitt on this hand and I thought, oh, I'll just switch hands real quick and then scoop it on because this is my good hand. So I switched it over to my bare hand, this 450-degree pan.
Oh, no.
My wife just heard, she hears me in the corner of the room go, oh, no, that's not good.
Right. Oh, man.
Yeah, that was, I had blisters all along the inside of my thumb to the index finger, goodness. And then it was not a good one.
Wonderful. Yeah, I can almost feel it.
Right. Yeah, those are the worst too, because then you can't take a shower for like a week.
Oh yeah,
a little bit of steam in the shower burns.
Oh man.
So are you trading mostly ES these days, or
Oh yeah, but I've been doing that most of my life, to be honest. So I in the real beginning, like I don't know, like 13 years ago, when I switched like from stocks to futures, I was mainly trading ES, but I was also just checking out other things, right? So I traded like oil, gold. What else did I do? I did some European things like DAX. How you call it? Euro stocks. Yeah, I tried a lot of things, you know, but.
How's the liquidity on the European markets? Like, I always look at them.
It's much lower. Yeah. It's much lower, of course. So the DAX, it's kind of crazy. It's super volatile with like very, very little. The book is very, very empty. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could work in your favor. against you. Normally it went against you, but yeah, so I kind of avoided the DAX, but the Euro stocks was kind of in a way like more similar to the ES. Mm-hmm. Because the books were always full, there was like plenty of like contracts that you could like drop in, and so yeah, it felt more similar to yes. But I, to be fair, it's a very stupid reason, but I just don't like to get up that early.
Oh God, so, I don't.
You know, I just like to trade US because like I can like you know like get up a bit later, and that habit just like yeah, that just stayed. So now I just. I solely trade ES, to be honest. I just trade nothing else.
I don't know how those people do it on the West Coast over here. They're getting up at like 5:30 right? to trade. Like, fuck.
Yeah, I couldn't. I would trade like Europe maybe. Oh, no, that's even earlier. But I would trade like Asia or something then.
I was actually just giving that some consideration because I'm more of a night owl type, you know, myself. Like I don't like getting up early. But I don't know. It just doesn't move the same way it does.
It doesn't.
I don't know how much of a learning curve it would be.
No, exactly. That's very true. It's very true. Oh, but like you were right. So it's another thing that I changed, like besides like working on myself, I was also like trading less different contracts, like just focus on mm-hmm. one thing. That was one thing that I changed. And in the beginning, I was also trading like 24/7. I was at the desk. I made hours like you won't believe. Like it's like, it made no sense. Like, and right now I just usually trade like the open until like European close, mm-hmm. right? So like very limited trading hours. And I do much better. So yeah.
Are you more of a systematic type trader, or do you incorporate a lot of order flow or other like discretionary type things into your trading?
Yeah, so I use order flow, and that's I've been using it for a long time already. And actually, we come up on that later. I guess that's also why I created the software company.
okay.
But yeah, so it's the footprint charts for me that I mainly use. I also look at the dome a little bit, but those two come out. And some volume profiles for the longer term.
Dom is a tough one for me. Like try to learn how to read it, but it's too hard to not look at it when you don't need to be looking at it, because it's very easy to justify a trade at That's any true. Point just watching the Dom.
That's true. It's my like my final like trigger, I guess, so okay. to say.
Yeah.
It's not what I watch the constantly, right? So what I mainly watch is the footprint. When it comes to levels that I previously set with my volume analysis of the day, but yeah, the dome for me is the trigger in the end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking for like just responsive biddings, trap traders? Like, what sorts of things do you want to see?
Yeah, and that too, and also when I see it's hitting volume. You can also see it on footprint, kind of, but it's not moving, right? So you see like
absorption, or
yeah, it's absorption, yeah. exactly that, yeah. And I try to lean against that.
Okay, I mean, that sounds a lot like how Vico trades. Which, if you're over in Portugal, maybe I need to get you his contact information. Maybe you guys can go meet up somewhere.
Okay, yeah, I don't know who that is, but to be honest, I don't know a lot of people.
He's another guy who trades in with Trade Pro Academy that we've worked with over the last few years. Good guy. Cool. He's like a walking algorithm.
Okay.
Meet a guy who has no emotions.
Oh, wow. Nuts. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, for trading might be good, but
yeah. He's a damn good trader. Yeah. Nice. So you kind of hinted at the platform then. So
right.
You said that you created it.
Right.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So my plan was not at all to like create a software company at all. Mm-hmm. So I think it's about 7 years ago now. Yeah, so when I was using Market Delta, I was developing an algorithm for myself, but I used their system to write it on, right? So I was like mm-hmm. like 90% done, and then I don't know if you remembered or even know Market Delta, but they just switched, or they announced that they would be changing systems like 1 week in advance or something. It was super weird at the time, and I was like, no, why are you doing this? Like I wrote it specifically for the platform, and I had a lot of money in already to write that, and I was like, oh, are you kidding me? Like, no, this is not happening. And I was almost crying, I guess. But and then I was like, no. And then it hit me, like, hey, okay, so the thing is, like, Market Delta was like a white label product of InvestorRT, right? Mm-hmm. So Investment Tea had, I learned after, had a agreement with Marco Delta so that Marco Delta could like use the footprint on their platform and white label it as Marco Delta. So when they changed to another platform, which, well, they did because there were some discussions with RT and, you know, they were not friends anymore.
Yeah.
So I think they changed to a system that, actually, I'm not sure. I think it's like CQG or something. And they, I think so. And that's what they started using after, which was something that my algorithm would not work on at all because, you know, it was written on the back end of IRT and Marco Delta. So after crying, my plan was like, hey, so I need a footprint. So because I, you know, like, that's what I use. And so I'll build it for IRT so I can use it the same way as I did with Marco Delta. So
so much work.
Right? And so I did that. And that's kind of how it started because, like, you know, I posted it, I think, on Twitter and on Futures.io, which it's named differently now. But mm-hmm. And that's it. And then a lot of people were like, oh, cool, I want this too. I'm like, okay, cool. So I made a product out of it and the rest is history. So it was super funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of funny yeah, how so that works out.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so it was running from day one. And I was like, okay, cool. it went pretty well. So I was, you know, I was just traveling and, you know, training from beaches all over the world. I'm like, okay, this is nice. And just enjoying life and, you know, that was good. And that's basically, and at the time, like I called it AMS Training Group, you know, which was based in Amsterdam. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's where things started for me. And yeah, so it was like called the AMS Delta Print, you know, so I didn't want to call it Footprint because I didn't want to have any legal right. issues also with with potential legal issues with IRT or Marco Delta. And yeah, that's the start of how it, you know, how it began.
Did you have any like, I don't know what, I'm guessing it wasn't smooth, like starting this thing up, like when somebody says, hey, build me a, you know, I have interest in this. And then you decide to go and turn it into a company. Like,
yeah,
walk me through like that process. Cause you know, making something for yourself is a lot easier than making something that you're going to put out to the world.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it's been a long time though. Let me see.
You can stick to the high points if there's any.
Yeah. Like, so I ended up like hiring someone on like, I don't know, like Upwork or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we worked together on building the whole thing. And then later we needed to add like the licensing, right? Because like, yeah, first it was just for myself and I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, we can make it into a product. Sure.
Right.
So,
right.
Then I found like a membership system that I wanted to use. So yeah, and then I asked him like, hey, can you integrate that into the app? And yeah, he could, he said. So, you know, a couple of weeks later, he like integrated it into the plugin. Mm-hmm. And it was working. So yeah, so that was kind of it.
Wow, so it was actually pretty smooth, it sounds like then.
I mean, this is a short story. This is the short story. So, okay. If you want the long story, I can tell you, but it's okay. Before that happened with that developer, I had another developer that said, okay, I can make that also. Yeah, sure, let's do it. So he was like 95% done. And he sent to me, he said to me like, hey, I'm sorry. I like for religious reasons, I don't think I can work on financial products. I'm like, okay, cool. That's yeah, I was like, okay, cool, that's no problem. Like, if that's the case, sure, whatever. You know, like, no worries. So I told him, like, hey, can you then just send me what you already have? And then we just go our own ways, right?
Right.
So I thought, what he did was, like, he formatted his hard disk and didn't send it to me. And
what?
And there was...
Why? What was his objection?
I don't know. I think he was just scared about being judged about his... religion or something that he did and he wasn't sure about it. I don't know. It was I was like, what, are you kidding me? We worked on this for so long. I mean, and you just deleted it? Like, what the hell?
It sounds like he met Jesus at some point while he was coding that.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Wow. That sounds like something that happened over here, not over in Europe.
Yeah, it was let's say I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to start over. So that was the real beginning. Yeah. And that was very interesting. Yeah.
So you kind of told us about like why you had to develop this. Like, tell me like what's gone into it. Like, what makes it unique? What need is this filling for other people?
You mean specifically the footprint that I developed or the new app, you mean?
Oh, the entire platform. Let's talk about the platform as a whole.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So previously, they were just plugins, right, for other platforms. Mm-hmm. And that was all nice and it worked well. And people liked it because like they liked the way I visualized it and things like that. So then I got the ambition to make my own platform. Silly me. You know, and that was like, it's now 3.5 years ago. And we still haven't released. We're almost about to release next month. Mm-hmm. So the estimation was 9 months to a year to develop this.
Oh, man.
Yes.
So it wasn't smooth.
No, it was not at all. It was not at all. No. I'm pretty sure I'm 10 years older now during this, and I probably lost some hair. Yeah. So, but the ambition was to make something that was our own, right? So we had a good plugin. People liked it, but we wanted to, yeah, maybe a bit selfish, but I also wanted the platform that I can trade on my Mac, right? On my Mac. So I'm a heavy Mac user.
Oh, okay.
And almost none of the platforms are working on Mac. You either have to use like Parallels or something like that, some kind of like thing that you can run Windows on.
Even Sierra Charts doesn't?
I don't think so. No.
I thought they had a Mac version.
They do?
Maybe they don't.
Oh.
I don't know.
I don't think so. But even if they had, I tried Sierra and it drove me nuts.
Yeah, Sierra's its own mess.
Yeah, it's too much for me. So I couldn't deal with that. So so I didn't. But at the time, at least when I did that, they didn't have a Mac version. Maybe they do have now. I don't know. But so I wanted to have like a platform that runs and with Rhythmic. So my preferred data feed is Rhythmic. And there, mm-hmm. as I know it, there is no like trading platform that runs Rhythmic.
Okay.
Or on the browser, actually. We have also a browser version, and that doesn't exist at all. So, mm-hmm. and I also had like a preference for Rhythmic because at the time, to be honest, I haven't been much on like social media stuff and all. Haven't been up to date with all the trading groups and whatever. At the time, I had this idea. There was no option to use like a data feed that had full depth except Rhythmic. Okay. So Rhythmic had full depth where you can trade on, right? So I wanted full depth because I also was looking in the dome, right? So and I wanted to see where the orders were. So sometimes, you know, like if they're in the ES was like a 1,000 or 1,500 bit somewhere, I wanted to see it. I don't know why, I just wanted to see it.
Right.
So, but it was only possible on Rhythmic. So I always use Rhythmic. And yeah, that's why this is the first data feed that we integrated. And it was very challenging to make it work on the web, to be honest. Super, super challenging. I guess why that's 3.5 years in that one. Anyway, yeah.
Is that mostly the building of it, or is it the negotiating like all the different agreements to be able to like get the data feeds?
No, it's just the building. Like the negotiation is easy. Like, yeah, no, it's just building. Yeah.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
But I also have a funny story about that. So, but anyway, so like, I figured if I would like a Mac version, I figured more people would like that, right? Yeah. So because like, yeah, they already told me now, but yeah, so Mac is a big thing for me. But yeah, obviously we're going to have a Windows version as well.
You mentioned the browser version. I was curious because it seems like those are starting to get a little more popular these days. Like TopStep
is
releasing one. TradingView is kind of browser.
TradingView, of course. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think mainly because of TradingView TradingView is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But they don't have like real tick data, right? So it's not like raw tick data. So I know why.
They don't have level 2. Yeah.
No, even that. Like, so.
Oh really?
It's super heavy on performance, right? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, we learned that that's the case, and that's probably why they don't have it. So yeah, we put in a lot of work in like getting the performance right, you know, because like a lot of platforms, like they just like freeze, you know, when the opening is or something like that, or news.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we wanted to avoid that, but since it's tick data, there's so much data coming in, right? That, yeah, you know, almost any platform like would have a hard time doing that, processing that. So, and especially when it's on the browser, because like, you know, like you have more limited resources because it's limited by the browser also sometimes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that makes it very challenging. And so we put a lot of work into that, doing that, getting it right.
Are there any other drawbacks to using the browser versus the applications? Because it actually seems like some of the ones that I've tried out actually run, they seem to work faster or look faster.
I don't think they are faster per se.
Maybe faster than Sierra charts.
Maybe, I don't know. Like it's been 10 years or so that I tried that, but yeah, and I'm not going back. But
like, I would have thought that like you'd have issues with like maybe some latency. Like it'd probably be a little harder to use like algorithmic type stuff on there.
No, that depends where your server is located. So that depends on that. So for example, like how the way we integrate Rhythmic is like through a web API, right? So it's like direct from client to front end. So if you would do it otherwise and you want to have a browser version, for example, you need like a server somewhere in the world that processes it and then sends it to the front end. So that's slower. Slower. And that is how we had it first. So we realized that it's not going to be fast enough. So I think we had like maybe like 200 milliseconds or 300 milliseconds more delay. And it's like, yeah, that's not going to be nice. So yeah, we kind of pivoted in using like that type of API to like a web protocol thing. Yeah. So that's also very interesting. So we need to like change things up again. But yeah, so now it's fast and now it's good. And now it also works well in the browser. So yeah, that was definitely challenging. Yeah, for sure.
You said the release is coming up in the next month.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's the plan, yeah. At least.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah, and we're working very hard. Like, I'm still like hiring extra people now to work on it. Yeah, it's a lot of things to do.
Do you need any testers? Because I think probably have some people in our community who might be interested in checking it out.
Yeah, no, I mean, at the moment, not. But like, yeah, sure, we could use it in the future, like soon. Mm-hmm. But we have some people to test it. But yeah, sure, you know, like the more the merrier.
I can think of one guy I know who's been trying to get away from Sierra charts and switching to doing everything through TradingView. We got a couple guys who do most of their stuff through TradingView, and if there's a better option out there, they might be interested in it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think TradingView is great. Except if you want to heavily use like the DOM and the order flow and things like that, then maybe not. But I think for a lot of people that will work fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's true. Yeah. Right. I agree. Yeah. So the plan was like to release April 1st. And I said somewhere, oh, no joke, but it might turn out to be a joke.
April Fools.
Because we might not be able to make that. So yeah, but I'm very much going to try. But it might be a couple of weeks later. So yeah.
It's imminent one way or the other.
Yes, it's coming. It's coming. It's coming for sure.
There's no more major obstacles that you have to clear.
No, at the moment not. Yeah. No, at the moment not, luckily. Yeah, we had plenty, so yeah.
All right, you mentioned Amsterdam a couple times now. Are you from Denmark or are you from somewhere else?
Netherlands, yeah. So I'm not born in Amsterdam, but I lived most of my life in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's where I studied. It's, you know, where I went. Like, I moved there when I was 17 and then just... stuck around.
Tell me,
no, enjoy the city.
Tell me about the city then. Like, how does it compare to, have you been to the US?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How, like, what are some of the, like, the major differences besides the rampant drug use in the red light district?
Yeah. So that's an area I try to avoid. I'm not a fan of that. Yeah. I know a lot of tourists are just go because of that.
Well, I think people just want to see it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense though. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, I try to avoid that area. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, like it's still like almost like a village, right? Because Amsterdam, I think, like, I don't know actually, but I think it's like more or less like 1 million people, or maybe 99,000. I don't know. It's not like super big.
Right.
Actually, I don't know. I'll Google it later. But it's not super big. So it's like, I liked it because, like, you know, you can like run into people like randomly and you know, like when you're on your bike, biking around and you're like, oh, hey, you here.
Right.
So that's fun. Like, it's nice. And because I studied there, you know, like, I had a group of friends there and, you know, like, yeah, they had a lot of good like techno parties there like, a long time ago, you know. Yeah. So, you know, it was good for me. Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
What is the deal with absinthe? Why is everybody so in love with that drink? I had my mom pick me up a bottle of it last time she was in Amsterdam, and I was not impressed.
Sorry, wait, what?
Absinthe, the drink, the liquor.
Oh man, yeah.
I was not a huge fan of that.
No, me neither. But yeah, I mean, I've seen it, and probably don't remember the rest. Right. So, you know, yeah, it's interesting, but it's been a while though. I currently don't drink at all, but like at the time I did. So there was definitely some interesting drinks over there.
that stuff. I know everyone says it gives you, like, there's a big rumor here in the US. I remember growing up, everyone always talked about absinthe. It was the drink that makes you hallucinate. And
oh yeah,
apparently that's not the case.
Well, that didn't happen to me, luckily. But
I tried it, did not make me hallucinate. I think you have to drink enough to where you're basically just drunk. It's not.
The way I did it, like you nip it, right? Like you.
You're supposed to put like the spoon and then like pour it over like a cube of sugar and like it dissolves in it. Like there's this whole ritual that people do where it's.
Oh no, we didn't do that. We just drank it from the bottle, but like slowly.
Okay.
I know. Yeah.
You're like a high schooler with a 40.
Yeah. Like with my student club, I guess, like something like that.
So you've got to travel quite a bit then. I know we got a little bit of extra time here. What's some of your favorite places that you've been?
Yeah, so the thing is, because like, you know, with trading, you can like work from anywhere. Yeah. So that's kind of what I did for a while. So yeah, usually in the winters from the Netherlands, because they're cold and rainy.
Yeah.
I usually left. So I just went to like Asia or, you know, like I went a few times to Bali, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam. Like
I heard Vietnam is amazing.
It is. Yeah, it's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try to like, you know, like either surf there or kite surf and, you know, just enjoy it. And but it was interesting though, because like in Asia, the time zone, you know, can be challenging when you're trading DES. So that was always funny, but I did it. Yeah. But it was nice. And then later also Central America and
Central America is pretty too, especially the oceans.
Yes, exactly. And I was traveling like on a little like winter trip sometimes. So I started in Cuba, then I went to Miami, Aruba, Curacao, and then I went to Dominican Republic. And then I was like, hey, this is nice. So I stayed there for a year. I didn't go back. I'm like, yeah. But it was nice, right? So yeah. I was like, I had like a deal with a hotel at the beach. I was like, yeah, so can I stay here long term? So they said like, sure, yeah. So I was just living there and learning kitesurfing there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just nice, you know? So I was like, yeah, trading there. Wi-Fi was good. Well, not always, actually. So it was an island, right?
Yeah.
So I set up a remote server there at the time. So if I would lose connection, that everything would be still running. So I would just log on to the computer, the remote computer, and everything was good. So because sometimes the power dropped.
Oh, no.
It was just gone in the whole, like, you know, like, yeah, it's an island. And so that was interesting. But then I found the guy, like, he had like a generator. So it would stay on, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But mainly I was there just trading for like from a remote computer and then just like viewing it from my computer because of that. Yeah, that was interesting.
Actually, we have a few guys who trade like that. One of the guys that in our group, he has his workstation at home. But then when he's at work, he's remotes in using his phone to place his trades. It's like pretty slick how he's got that
can
set
work.
Up.
That can work. Yeah.
You just got to do all your prep beforehand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know that trading futures on your phone is probably the
it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I tried it, like, you know, Friday night.
Yeah.
Hey guys, see what I can do. Lose money.
Check this out.
Yeah. Now I remember that. Then I was like clicking around, and before I know, I was down $500. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like,
we'll not do this anymore.
No free beer for me. Yeah, no, that's a bad idea. That's why I kind of like advise against trading from your mobile, right? It's like normally just a bad idea. Like unless you're like maybe trading like long-term or like swing trade or whatever, sure. But if you're just trading futures, nah.
Yeah, I made a rule that only close trades out from the phone. That's the only thing I do. Because I've had too many instances where on the phone, like it looks different than the brackets you're used to filling out. Like too many instances of accidentally buying when instead of selling and then like doubling my position or things like that. Yeah.
No, exactly. To be honest, one time I was on the beach and I was trading options on oil on my phone. It was nuts. Oh. Like I'm never gonna do that again. But it was nuts. But I saw the can I tell you numbers or like is it weird? Like
you can if you want. It's up to you.
So I was like trading that and I saw the P&L moving like from 2K, 3K, 5K, 7K, and it was like, what the fuck? It was like a matter of like seconds, right? I'm like, Jesus, what the hell? Like, and I'm clicking and it takes a while for the order to hit right on your mobiles. I'm like, before I know it, it was like changing another 2K. I'm like, what the hell? Like, this is like so stressful. But in the end, it was like lucky I made a profit, but it was nuts. You know, I'm never going to do that again. It was totally completely nuts.
That wasn't when oil went below zero, was it?
No, not then. It was before that, but it was also interesting. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was super interesting because all the platforms couldn't handle negative prices, right? So,
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. That was an issue. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There were a lot of lawsuits after that.
Oh, I bet. So, I wonder what happened. We weren't trading during that time, were you?
No, I was trading, but I wasn't trading oil. Okay. So, for me, it was okay, but I saw it happening. So, I was like, But, you know, I was already at the time just trading ES.
Yeah.
So I was just not touching it. But I saw it.
So it sounds like you've kind of gravitated more towards ES as like being your main asset. Is there any particular reason why that one or NQ or some of the other ones?
Yeah. So NQ is a little bit like the DAX. It moves very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes, it does.
And it's not for my personality, it's like not good. It just stresses me out and I don't like it. So so the ES, that's it.
Fair
so
enough.
Right, and ES is a little bit, well, it can move a lot very fast, of course, but like in most cases it's just more normal. It's more like more flowy and you know, of course they still try to hit your stop, but you know, it's like in a nicer way.
That's fine.
So I don't know. I just I like the flow of it. It's something that I know very, very well. Not right. So after almost 15 years, I just know it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see a reason anymore just to move away from it, to be honest. So,
All right. Well, let's see. What else can we touch on while I got you here? Let's go back to the kite surfing thing. I've heard you mention that twice. What is kite surfing?
Oh, right. So it's like, it's like surfing, but like with a kite in your hand, pretty much. Like, it's connected to your like your waist, and basically you're powered by the movement of the kite. So you don't need to like, so you can also do it on flat water. So with surfing, you need a wave, right? To move, obviously. But with kite surfing, you could do it like just with the power of the kite. It just pulls you a lot, and you can jump with it, and you can do it. A lot of things. It's super cool.
So when you say kite, it's probably not like the kite that you take out to the park, the little.
No, it's a little bit bigger.
Okay, that's what I was imagining. So this is more like probably like a parachute almost.
I mean, it's more similar if you look at it to see it like that.
Because I think I've seen videos of that where like they, you can get some really good air with those, right? Like I've seen guys.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I had some high jumps. Yeah, it's nice.
Any big
when you want it, because sometimes when you hit like a wave and you know, you pull the bar up, you just fly whatever, like even if you don't want to. So yeah, sometimes it's tricky. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
You ever heard of the paragliding? The people who have like the little motors attached to the parachutes and then I talked to one guy who liked to do that a lot, and he was telling me about some of the updrafts that you can get with those things. Mm. And that just sounds terrifying.
I've seen that.
You catch a column of air that just shoots you up into the air a couple thousand feet.
Crazy, yeah.
Like, I'd probably be panicking. That's not.
Yeah, most likely, yeah. liquidate.
Yes. Liquidate my pants.
Yeah. Can I ask you something too? Like, what do you trade? Like, for example.
Well, now it's been mostly NASDAQ, but I've been kind of playing with the idea of going back to ES. That was what I started with. I spent the last 2 years learning. The group that we trade with now, most of them trade NQ. So to be on the same page with them, I made the switch too. But I'm starting to wonder whether it's good for my mentality to have it move as much and as fast as it can. Like, I like the aspect of, like, you put a trade on, you're going to know really quick whether you're right or wrong. Whereas sometimes with ES, like, you can sit in one of those trades for 15, 20 minutes before they wick you out.
Yeah.
So there's some, like, I don't know, I guess that'd just be like it's the mobile phone generation, right? Like, you want everything to happen quickly. I want to know now. And that may not necessarily be the best thing. That tends to lead to FOMO, revenge trading, and some other things that I don't necessarily like to see in my trading.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because I've been through them all, all the stages. And I guess that's a reason why I don't trade NQ. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just too much for me. But like I said, like anything can work from anyone. If it just like fits your personality, like fits your emotional, like awareness and you know, how you deal with that. Yeah. I think a lot of things can work for a lot of different people, but for me personally, I can still not deal with that. So
it's amazing how much the mental side of it plays into things. Like you said, like, knowing what works for you is really what's important. Not doing things because other people are doing them. Like, you know, you sat down to trade at the very beginning with your friend who's trading penny stocks. Like, how much of what he taught you do you still use today?
Yeah, nothing. Yeah,
okay.
Nothing.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's interesting. Yeah, true.
Are there any other big influences in your trading career? Like, people that you point to that'd be like, hey, he made a huge impact on me?
Yeah, I think yes, actually, because I don't remember how that happened, but I found like a trading group, like, when was that? Anyway, it was a group called like IOAMT, like Institute of Auction Market Theory.
Okay.
And it was led by Bill Duryea. And he kind of like, because of him, I got more into footprint charts and everything like that. Yeah. Yeah. That was it, actually. And he was a great guy. And, you know, like, he had a trading room every day. I met a lot of people there that I still talk to to this day. And so he introduced me to the footprint chart, and he was using Market Delta. So that's how I came to Market Delta. I was trading with him every day, you know, and see him getting out bad trades. He was like really super focused when he was down, and learned a lot from him. Learned a lot, yeah. But unfortunately, he passed away a couple years ago. But,
sorry to hear that.
Yeah. But learned a lot from him, and it was very very nice. Yeah,
that's. You mentioned something there, it's kind of in passing, but like being able to see him in losing trades, I think is huge with whatever group that you're trading with. Like, if you really want to see like somebody model good behavior, like, that's the person who shows you the good and the bad, I think, is key to finding success.
Exactly. No, I agree. I think if someone doesn't show you like losses, they're not traders. They're not traders.
Right.
No. Right,
it's gonna happen. I mean,
it's such a big part of trading, like losing and being able to lose. So I agree. But it was so interesting to see him, because, like, not always, but he often like was able to get back to it. Right, just so he was so focused. He was just like trading after the close, and he was just trading in, I don't know, till European Open or something if he had to.
Jeez.
So it was like, and not something that I would do, but but just like. A lot of respect, like, in seeing him doing that. So it was very interesting.
Hopefully he still found time to go and enjoy the proceeds of what he was doing.
Yeah
Well, because that's the other side of it, right? It's so easy to think that, or to fall into the trap that you need to be at the desk for, you know, as many waking hours as you can to maximize your income. But at some point, you got to decouple from that. You got to actually, you know, go and enjoy the fruits of your labors.
Yeah, I very much agree with that. I don't trade every day anymore. I just don't see the need anymore. You know, I like playing. I like playing tennis, paddle. I like to surf, kite surf. And if it's windy and it's a good day and sunny, I just go kite surfing. You know, and say like, there's always another trade. But that's the thing, right? There is always another trade. So even if you miss out on an amazing day, and you might have even lost, but let's say you thought you would win big. There's always another trade. So, and that's, there's no exception. There's always another trade every day, and every time. There's always another trade. So I don't have that FOMO anymore. I used to have in the beginning. Yeah, I really don't have that anymore.
What was there anything in particular that helped you get over that, do you think?
Yeah, not sleeping, I guess. Yeah. You know, because I used to like sometimes have positions like overnight.
Yeah.
And it just kept me up. I was always checking my phone on the quote, like what it was doing. And I was like, yeah, this is not the way I want to do this. Like, so it's not healthy.
If you can't sleep at night, usually that's a sign of the size is too much. Right. Right.
Yeah, that too. That too. Yeah, that too. But I think even with a one lot, I would look, but yeah.
Right. But, I know I would. Yeah. Yeah, I have to, when I shut off from the day, like I close everything out. I'm not looking at charts anymore. I need the time completely away. I can't be one of those guys that, well, let's just see what it's doing right now, because otherwise I'll do something silly.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's usually what happens. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, got anything else that you want to leave the listeners with? Any words of wisdom? Any final advice maybe?
I mean, start small, start with sims, start small, and, you know, don't get ahead of yourself, you know, like you have time to learn this, you know, it's not something that you're going to learn in a month or two. It's a real craft, you know?
Yeah.
I think at least. So take your time, you know, like don't beat yourself up if you're not profitable after 6 months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're after a year, be able to like make it to break even. I think you're doing pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's about where I'm at. I'm at a break-even trader right now, trying to get past that hump.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I had something I just was going to ask you. Oh, yeah, that's it. You've talked a lot about the footprint. Like, if somebody wants to learn the footprint, like, what are some like tips you can give them? Like what sort of things should they be watching for? How should they try to incorporate that into their trading?
Yeah, that's interesting because there's not a lot of things that I have looked at the time, but I think, like I said, I don't look much on YouTube about the things, but I think there are some videos on YouTube about footprint. But
well, even if they just wanted to build a chart and observe it, like what sort of things should like they pay attention for?
Well, yeah. So the thing is that with looking at footprint, I use like reversal bars. So I don't use any time-based bars. Mm-hmm. Because with reversal bars,
so like Renko?
No, it's like it's actual reversal bars, and I don't think every platform has it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we do obviously. So. It's similar to Renko, but not really. So it makes a new bar only when the amount is set of ticks is going against the high or low of the bar. So mm-hmm. that means that you reduce a lot of noise, you know, like if you look at the 3 minute chart or whatever you use, you have a lot of noise by time, you know, just by time passing.
Yeah.
And because if you look at footprint charts, you want to see the volume. And you want to see like how the, you know, like the bell curves, you want to see that happening in the footprint, but then vertical, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't really see that good or that clear if you use time-based bars, in my opinion. So
okay.
So that's why I solely use reversal bars for looking at footprint. But like I said, like for longer term, I look at like RTH, ETH sessions, district volume profile.
Volume profiles. One of my favorites, looking for those ledges and LVNs.
Right? Yeah, it's super good because yep. like that's the thing. Like it's just like it's so logical, right? Because it's based on actual data, and mm-hmm. and if it's an HVN or like high volume area, it means that a lot of people want to trade there. So you know it's an attractive right. price. It's just logic. And if it's an LVN like low volume, then it means that no one thought that price was interesting, right? No, so they skipped it.
Right.
So you have a high probability if you're trading near like an LVN. If you want to look for an entry, and of course it will not always work because it might just be at that time trying to make a new balance area and just blow through it. Sure, that happens,
right?
Because it's not going to always stay in that zone, in that range. But in general, you have a good chance because like it proved itself already that price was not interesting for most of the people, and mm-hmm. that's what I like so much about it, right? Because it's like it's logical, and it, to me it makes sense, and yeah, it's just something that I trust, so to say, because if I look at RSI or MACD, I'm like, yeah, what is this? I mean, come on.
Get out of here.
Yeah, right?
I mean, you off this channel. Yeah. I'm just kidding. Right.
So, no, it's just like, I mean, like, I'm not saying that it cannot work. I think it can work for some people. It just for me, it makes no sense. So I cannot look at it. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that's why I look at that order flow stuff. Yeah.
Well, Niels, I got to say, I really enjoyed getting to know you here. And I gotta say thanks to your buddy who set this up.
Yeah, Daniel. Yeah, yeah.
Daniel. Okay. What we should do, I think, is once you guys are ready to go live, maybe we can set up a demo in our Discord where we can have you come in, just kind of like walk through how the platform works and maybe take some questions from anybody who's interested.
Yeah, yeah. That would be amazing, of course. Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, keep checking on the website then. I assume you guys will have something on your socials or something letting people know when the actual live date's going to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure. I'll make sure that I put something in the episode description if you give us a more of a firm date once you got one.
Yeah, sounds good.
But I think it is time to wrap up for today, but that's okay, because if you enjoyed today's conversation, you still want more, you can always check out that guest directory. You can browse through all the amazing people we've had the pleasure of speaking with in the past. And if you'd like to learn more about Niels and the platform that he developed, go to trader.com, T-R-A-D-R-R, no E's allowed here. I'll be sure to include all those links in the episode description, just waiting for you to click on them. And I'll be back soon with another exciting episode. But till then, if you got something useful out of this discussion, then rate us, tell your friends, and have a great day. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.